Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording out in Reykjavik, Iceland, as always, on Sunday the 11th of August, 2024. And in Iceland, summer is officially cancelled. We've had more rain than this country has had for the last 40 years. So as I'm sitting in this green, leafy basement where I'm currently living, I'm watching the rain pounding the pavement outside, shaking all of the trees. It's an atmospheric rainy day, and it's been a very, very rainy summer, which is a great time, obviously, for staying indoors, taking in the rainy vibes, and playing some games, and that's what I have been doing. So this week's episode is going to be a bit of a roundup of a few different games that I have tried. I've been playing bits and pieces of four different games over the last week. The first one is Arco, a game that comes out on the 15th. It has an embargo that lifts soon, but it also has quite a lengthy demo, about 2 or 3 hours. So I'm sure I can talk about that because it's public already. I've been playing a little bit of Dungeons of Hinterburg, which has been popping off in the show's Discord. People are really loving that game. I've been struggling with it a little bit, but I'll talk about that as well. I played a little bit of Nobody Wants to Die. This is the cyberpunk detective noir game with a very lush soundtrack that we just heard a piece from by a Polish studio that span off from CD Projekt Red. It's a very visually striking game. And I've also been playing Creatures of Ava, a new game on Game Pass, a kind of a creature collecting 3D adventure. I've been playing quite a bit of that one, actually. That's the game that kind of won my attention so far. It's a very easy play. It's one of those games that you can just chill out with, not worry about too much, and just work your way through, clearing areas, collecting monsters. So I'll talk about Creatures of Ava as well. But before we get onto the games, a little bit of housekeeping. As you might know, Gaming in the Wild podcast is part of a community, like a loosely strung, informal community of really good independent games podcasts that people are making, like I make this podcast, on their free time, for fun, in their house, you know, independent games podcasts. There's a lot of podcasters in the Gaming in the Wild Discord, and I listen to all of their podcasts. I will, you know, stick them on whilst I'm playing, while I'm working, or while I'm walking, or whatever. And there's been some news going on lately in the podcast. I feel like people have been doing some stuff. People have been doing some good stuff. So I'm going to do a little roundup of a couple of bits and pieces that have come from the independent games podcasting community lately. First up, So Video Games, a great podcast. I have been on that podcast. Brad, the host of that podcast, has been on my show too. He's been on here for lots of Games of the Year episodes, and he guested to talk about a couple of games as well. And they just passed a big landmark. So Video Games passed 400 episodes last week. So Brad did a very special episode with a lengthy Q&A with loads of audience questions about console generations of the past, about food, about the Pacific Northwest, about parenting, about games of different types, all sorts of stuff. It was a really, really good episode. So a big congratulations to Brad for passing 400 episodes. And if you are not a listener of the So Video Games podcast, I think you should go and check it out. I will put a link in the show notes if you would like to go and check out that 400th episode of a really, really good games podcast. Secondly, friend of the show and patron of the show and community member Dovetail has a new podcast called Pages of Play. There are a couple of episodes out now, and they just put out a really lengthy, good, deep discussion about the game 1,000 Times Resist. I really enjoyed their chat, and I never tire of hearing people talk about 1,000 Times Resist. It feels like every time someone talks about this game, or every time I talk about it with a new person, or every time a group gets together to chat about that game, new things come up. It's just such a deep game, and it rewards thinking into it. And, you know, all players bring something different to the table. So I love hearing people talk about 1,000 Times Resist, and the Pages of Play episode is excellent. So I'll put a link in the show notes if you would like to listen to that 1,000 Times Resist episode, and give Pages of Play a follow as well. It's a new podcast. So check it out. It's a really good one. And finally, speaking of 1,000 Times Resist, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I myself guested on the pre-order bonus podcast made by Cameron and friend of the show, Jake. We had a 1,000 Times Resist conversation. We talked about the game at length for, I think, 1.5 or 2 hours. And Jake put it up pretty much unedited. You can hear the whole conversation that we had. It's on the pre-order bonus podcast. I've mentioned it before, but it's out now, so you can go and check it out. I will put a link in the show notes for that, but you can also find it at patreon.com/preordercast if you'd like to check that one out. Jake puts out a lot of patron-only episodes, but sometimes they are public. This is one of the public ones, so anyone can listen to it. And we had a great conversation about the game. It went to some really interesting places. Jake brings a lot of perspective from his literary studies and had a very strong emotional response to the game that we delved into. And, you know, some new things fell out from talking about the game for so long. So if you would like to hear more 1,000 times of this chat between me and Jake from the pre-order cast, then you can. And that's the end of that little podcast news roundup. So links in the description for all of those podcasts. I do heartily recommend them. And just before we get onto the games, I will mention that this show is a patron-supported show. If you would like to support this podcast, get access to the Discord and get a suite of bonus episodes about games, about off-topic things, about travel, about traveling in Japan, about traveling in Ireland, about books. There is a whole selection of podcasts there that you can get access to for just $1 a month. So if you would like more Gaming in the Wild and to join the community, go to patreon.com/gamingin the wild. There are 4 tiers starting at $1, and there is a boss tier at $10 for the biggest supporters. 2 people have upgraded to that tier, and I really appreciate that. It really helps to support me and the work that this podcast does. So a special thank you to the 2 boss tier patrons, Mike Sampier and Shy Guy. And a big thank you to all my patrons, and thank you to you if that's something that you would consider at patreon.com/gamingin the wild. And with that, let's get on with the show. So at the start of this month, I did the traditional Gaming in the Wild month ahead look, where I listed off 10 games that I am particularly excited about that are coming out in the month of July. A really good list. I think it's a really strong month. But no sooner had I released that podcast than 2 other games popped up. One which should have been on that list, which I completely forgot about, was Phantom Spark. It's probably, ironically, the game that I'm most looking forward to the release of this month. I've been playing it behind the scenes. If you haven't heard about Phantom Spark, it is coming out on the 15th. It is a dreamy, compulsively addictive sci-fi racing game. It's made by 2 Icelandic developers that I know a little, and I've been chatting to them throughout development. I've interviewed them for the local magazine here. So, full disclosure, I know the developers, but if the game wasn't good, I wouldn't be talking about it in these terms. I played 6 hours of it when I was playtesting in inverted commas, but just really, really enjoyed it, so I played the whole thing, basically. You control a very maneuverable flying car in this game, Wipeout style, and you race through these floating ruins that are just gorgeous to look at. A really beautiful, dusty color palette. Just eye-popping graphics, lovely architecture. It has a gentle breakbeat soundtrack that sort of rests somewhere in the 90s and gives it a 90s breaks aesthetic. They're very short runs that you do. They are not laps or circuits. They are A to B challenges with checkpoints along the way that will tell you if you are improving on your last time or if you are not doing as well. It's a game that is all about the racing line. It's all about finding a racing line. It's about managing your speed, maintaining momentum through corners, and trying to achieve perfection. And it really does feel like perfection is attainable. And that means that you can restart very, very quickly. And you will restart very, very quickly, because as soon as you've finished a track, or if you've crashed into a wall even, you can just hit a button, start again in seconds, and that makes for a very, very, very compelling loop where you're trying to best your own time, you're racing against your own ghost, you're racing against ghosts that are champions or challengers, characters that will talk to you. And the whole thing is just lovely. It's a great feeling racing game, and it has a really lovely vibe to the whole thing. It's very, very addictive, very easy to get into a flow state and play it for hours on end. So I will be talking about this one again in the future, but I really, really recommend it. There is a demo on Steam now where you can play the first 3 tracks. And I'm not a huge racing game guy, but occasionally one really, really gets me, you know. I think the last game that really got me in this way was Forza 5, which I played to death and like cleared the map. There is an occasional racing game that just feels right and gets its hooks into me. Phantom Spark is one of those. So even if you're not a racing game person, I recommend checking it out. And if you are a racing game person, then you definitely have to play this one. That's Phantom Spark, coming out on the 15th. Another game that evaded my top 10 games to look forward to that are coming out in August, but turns out to be awesome, is Arco. And I left this one out on purpose. I played the demo of Arco back at Steam Next Fest, and I bounced off it pretty hard. I just did not click with the turn-based combat. And so I'd kind of written it off. But I saw that Pop Agenda are promoting this one, the PR company, and they work only on the best games. Like, I trust them so much. They are an amazing curator of games. Their entire catalogue, I will play something just because they are repping it, because they have such a high bar of quality. And so when I saw that they were repping Arco, I thought, well, there must be something here. So I requested a code and they sent one to me. I've been playing the game. I'm 4 hours in. It's under embargo until, I think, Monday or Tuesday. But there is a demo out now publicly, so I'm sure I can talk about the demo because you can play it yourself. It's a really substantial demo that gives you the first two acts of the game. And I really, really got into it with the second swing. I'm glad that I gave it another chance because it's an excellent game. It's a top-down pixel art adventure. The art is gorgeous in this game. It has a very unusual camera. It's sort of top-down, but the camera is zoomed out very, very, very far. So your character is literally just a couple pixels on the screen. Somehow they manage to characterize it. You spend most of the time riding around on a llama-type creature. You can see that your character is wearing a cowboy hat that is, you know, about 6 pixels big, basically. But I think the fact that it focuses on landscape gives it an epic western sweep. You're always looking at mountains, you're always looking at forests, plains. You can see mountains in the distance that you might go to later. A little bit like maybe something like a Highland Song, which often zooms out and gives you this huge landscape vibe. And it really does serve the game very well, I think. Especially because it's a revenge quest in the classic spaghetti western style. You're looking for some people who have wronged you a long time ago. You're going from village to village, talking to people, gathering clues, following up leads. You get little quests to go from place to place. There are side quests you can do, like clearing out monsters for people or finding a lost object. So there's lots to get your teeth into here. You ride around on your llama-like mount, talking to people, collecting objects, and getting into combat. The combat is very interesting. It's like simultaneous turn-based combat. So the time freezes. You can see what your enemies are going to do if you hover over them. You can plan accordingly. And then when you hit go, everyone moves at once. So it has like a live-action, staggered, tactical feeling to it. It's a really interesting hybrid system. And you have a lot of abilities in combat. You have ranged attacks, melee attacks, area of effect, bombs that you can throw, or sweeps of a giant sword. You have defensive moves, you have buffs, you have a dash that will jet you across the screen that is on a cooldown that will help you to get out of trouble. And you really have to use them all to win in the combat because it's very fun, but it gets very challenging too. It certainly does not hold your hand. You have to be creative. You have to adapt to different enemy sets, enemy types, enemies that will charge you, enemies that will mob you. Super strong enemies, bosses to fight. You have to adapt your tactics constantly. There's also a skill tree so you can buff your abilities or get new combat abilities so it stays fresh throughout and gets more complex as you go. I really like the story too. It's very gritty. Your character is kind of traumatized, a bit like in Gunbrella, if you played that one last year, when you have a noirish story with a kind of a ruined central character who is on a quest to, you know, redress something that went wrong in their life, someone who's just about holding it together. It also has consequential choices with branching paths. It's just a very intriguing game all round. I love the graphics, the camera angle, the western music. The writing is good, the combat is good. Everything is right with this one. I will be playing it to the end for sure. I have just now passed where the demo ends. It's a very generous demo. So I say check it out if you're at all interested by what I've said. That is Arco. It's coming out on Switch and Steam on the 15th. The next game I'm going to talk about is Nobody Wants to Die. This is quite an intriguing one. It's a first-person cyberpunk detective game with walking sim elements and some investigation mechanics to spice things up as well. You're going to spend a lot of time walking through beautiful spaces. You're going to be investigating, looking at clues, threading things together, working out sequences of events to solve a murder and a larger meta story as well. It was made by a CD Projekt Red spin-off studio called Critical Hit. It is their first game. And I think that you can see strands of The Witcher, specifically the detective stuff, and Cyberpunk 2077 in the aesthetic, in the DNA of this game. It also has an Art Deco look to it, like a Bioshock. It's just a visually very, very striking game. Considering that it's a small indie title, I think it says a lot that Digital Foundry did a dissection of the visuals on their channel. They are, you know, the game tech obsessives. This game does a lot with light. It does a lot with smoke and particles. It does a lot with reflections. It is a real visual showpiece. And I think if you like cyberpunk cities and, you know, Bioshocky, kind of dark, murky, art deco, sort of sci-fi, then you could play this game and just enjoy looking at it, honestly. I think it has a really good intro sequence, actually. You start off sitting in a car and you're kind of at a drive-in, and it has a 1950s vibe to it. But then there's a little moment where the city reveals itself to you, and suddenly you're seeing flying car traffic jams, vistas of the multi-layered, multi-tiered city in deep, dark rain, the huge old buildings and the architecture, the pop art hologram advertisements dancing through the air. It has a dash of Blade Runner noir, a dash of Bioshock grandeur, just brilliant. I will say the same about the music. It has an orchestral Hollywood score that is just jaw-dropping. It's one of the more ambitious game soundtracks that I've heard. It's very, very well done, very lushly produced. It's just a great sort of jazzy orchestral noir soundtrack, and it lends an air of quality to the whole game. When it comes to the gameplay, things didn't stack up quite as well, I would say. The storytelling didn't quite hit for me. All of the elements are there, but I think it sped through the setup a little quickly, and there's a bit of an info dump at the start. I didn't feel like I quite had time to buy into or get grounded in this world. I always felt like I was missing a step in the game sort of really landing a moment for me, or letting me know what was important to remember, or, really pushing home the things that you should be hearing about or paying attention to. It felt just a little loose, a little rough around the edges in the storytelling. But the setup is that you live in a future where people skip between bodies when they reach old age. So they are dodging death, basically. That means the bodies have to come from somewhere. There is politics around that. It's a strange form of body skipping immortality. So real death is very rare in this society. You play as a troubled cop, and you start investigating an apparent suicide by a high-flying political figure who has been around for a very, very long time. And it's an interesting setup. There's also a main character plotline because you've lost a wife, and that has affected your character very badly. So they are, you know, heavy drinking, they are suffering. They're like a classic film noir detective character. And I found that a little bit over-familiar. Maybe they overplayed that hand just a little, to the point where it felt a little tired, I would say. But the game switches between travel cutscenes, where you are in your flying car going from place to place. You do not get to control the flying car, which I was so sad about. It's like as close as I've been to the true cyberpunk flying car fantasy in, you know, modern graphics. I guess we have Cloudpunk, which is a game about flying around a rainy cyberpunk city, but it's a voxel game. This game is really high fidelity, and watching the character steer in and out of the traffic and go from place to place, just, I felt so frustrated. I really, really wanted to control that car and have the Blade Runner flying car fantasy, but it wasn't to be. When you do get control, it's when you arrive at a location. So you come into a room or a series of rooms or a building. You get to walk around. The first one is the scene of the crime, I suppose. There is someone hanging from a tree as if they've committed suicide. Then you get introduced to all of the elements of the game. You get introduced to using your x-ray magnifying glass thing so you can follow power cables that you can see through the wall. There are various other things you can use. There is a time rewinder where if you find a spot of significance, you can replay what occurred on that spot, and various other tools that you have at your disposal. There are optional things that you can discover that your character will remark upon and give you more world context about. So it's a slow play. It's quite a languid play. I didn't particularly enjoy the investigation mechanics. I found them all a little fiddly. And it seems like it would work well on a whiteboard if you were trying to plan out how a detective game might work. But when you're actually executing it, you're just pressing a lot of stuff to get these, like, you know, 10-second moments to occur where you're winding time back to a specific place. Maybe you miss it. I always felt a little confused within what I was quite supposed to be doing. And so the game ends up telling you what to do. And then you feel like you're just following an instruction manual rather than expressing yourself. So something about it was a little clunky. There are a couple of cursory mini games involved when you use the time wind mechanic or other things. We have to do button inputs to make them work. But I didn't find it to be a coherent or enjoyable set of tools to use. But I was very interested in the story, and so I was planning to play on in this game. But unfortunately, there is a mini game that you have to do that was a bit of a nail in the coffin for me. It's a clue arranging game, like a little bit like, you know, in Alan Wake 2, there is the chalkboard where you're pinning stuff up and putting threads between different clues. It's almost automated, but still a little tedious. This is a much more interactive and much worse version of that. It's like a holographic chessboard where every clue is a piece and you have to arrange them in a very specific order in order for your character to have a realization and for the plot to move on. I hated it, honestly. I couldn't figure out the logic in the placement of each piece. I felt like I was just trial and erroring my way through it. It literally took me 20 minutes, and I think it was supposed to take me, you know, three. And I just hated it. I really, really, really did not want to do it again. And so even though I was curious about the game, I thought, if I'm going to have to do this after every investigation scene, it's making me miserable. So I think I'm going to nope out of the game, basically. So this is a game that is very high on style. It has a somewhat intriguing central murder mystery. It has an interesting cyberpunk world. It has beautiful interiors, great music, and the voice acting is solid. But when it comes to gameplay, it missed the mark on every front, to the degree at which it kind of tanked the experience for me. I might give it a break and then come back to it fresh later down the line and see if I can get into it, because I am curious where the story goes, but I'm not exactly feeling the call right now. So that was my time with Nobody Wants to Die. Another game that I tried and was very optimistic about but didn't quite gel with was Dungeons of Hinterberg. This is a Game Pass action adventure. It has a Studio Ghibli-inspired art style, a very fresh illustrated look. It's gorgeous. I love the animation. The main character has a wonderful run cycle where her bob sort of bounces as she runs. It feels great to run through the world. It has a really nice European mountain town setting with cable cars going up the mountains, bright wooden houses, open spaces to explore. The town of Hinterberg is your hub, and that contains a simple social sim component where you can talk to people, spend time with them, deepen your affinity, and get rewards. But the meat of the game is the dungeons and the exploration. So you come to an open area, you run around collecting things, there are, you know, bits to pick up, characters to talk to, and dungeons to do. When you get to a dungeon, you go through, there are puzzles, there are combat arenas, there are bosses. And I put a couple of hours into this one. I played the tutorial dungeon, which is quite short. There is a boss where you have to take out its legs before, so that a big rock kind of collapses on the top of it. Pretty simple. I got a taste of the social sim, so I spoke to a couple of people, spent a couple of nights, and I went up into the first main area of the game, where you get a cable car up to the mountains, you explore an open area, you get your magic powers that allow you to throw rocks, and drop bombs. And I did the first dungeon, completed that one. There were some puzzles in it that I started to butt my head against. I actually stopped several times during that dungeon because I became frustrated with the game. There was a puzzle using a kind of a winch mechanic, but because there is so much decking in the game, there is so much crates, boxes, barrels, lamps swinging, chests, things that you can or can't interact with, most of it is not interactable. I found that the noise was drowning out the interactable things, which are not highlighted as interactable. And there is so much junk in the levels that I was having a readability issue and struggling to know what I should be looking at. Other people seem to have not had that problem, so it could well be a me thing. But it really did feel like pulling teeth getting through these fairly simple puzzles. I had to look up videos online to get past a couple of them, and it was just that I just hadn't seen what I was supposed to be doing. Because it had sunk into the background for me. That happened again and again, and I would say that sort of took the wind out of my sails in regard to this game a little bit, but once I had started to look at it critically, I realized that the combat is rudimentary, and to be honest, outside of the look, I really wasn't enjoying the game at all. The dialogue felt a little stilted and strangely written to me, a little mawkish, just not quite buying into the characters. So without good combat and without good dialogue and not enjoying the dungeons, even though the game is very charming, it was just a big bust for me. However, I will say that in the Discord, people have been loving this game. They are finding it to be a comfort food game. They are enjoying the Zelda-style dungeons. They are enjoying the dialogue and progression. It sounds like there are some big surprising story events mid-game that change things up. And so the game is taking risks and going places. So it's a bust for me, but a lot of people in the Discord are really buzzing on this one. There is a very busy channel dedicated to this game in the Games of the Moment section, and it's really nice to see people enjoying it. So to everyone that is enjoying it, sorry to yuck your yum, it wasn't for me, but I'm really glad that it has found its audience. That is Dungeons of Hinterberg. And the final game that I'm going to give a little mention of here is Creatures of Ava. This is another third-person game where you are running around in a densely forested natural world. You play as an explorer, as a biologist who has come to a dying planet where there is an indigenous race that lives there in a sort of shamanistic sort of treehouse sort of village situation with a bit of mysticism and very connected to the planet. You come from a scientific background. You've come to this planet because there is something called the withering that is creeping through the nature. It's like a grey rot. We see it a lot in video games, so I'm sure you can imagine what that's like. And there are many, many animal species on this planet. It's very rich with wildlife. There are animals running around everywhere. They're like sort of cross between Pokemon and animals that we might recognize, like deer or elephants and so forth. And you have to walk around. You have to learn how to charm the animals. There's a little music mini game in an Ocarina of Time style where you play the animal song back to it, and then you can then Pied Piper it. And you have to like get all of the animals onto your Noah's Ark by teleporting them out of there. It has a strange eco tale to it, because obviously like removing all of the wildlife from a planet, even if you are trying to save them, has big questions in it. I mean, I think this game thinks it's an eco game, but I'm not sure playing it that it actually is an eco game, or at least if it is, it's a very blunt instrument and perhaps somewhat muddled in what it's trying to say. There is also a collectathon element to it. So as you are running around this world, you'll be picking plants. They grow back if you go more than 10 meters away. So that's not a very good eco message to be passing either, that you pick everything you see and it will immediately grow back. So it's a bit of a muddled message on the eco game front. The writing is okay. You have a friend on the radio who's talking you through all of these things. And the planet has a bit of history to it as well. Humans have been there before, so there are some ruined human bases. There is a history to this planet. There is an ancient race that used to live there that built temples. And so as you are going around taming animals, you are also discovering the history of this world. And I really enjoyed this one. It's a strange mid-game that I was just really enjoying. I think of things like The Gunk. I think of things like Wavetail. I think of things like Fair. These games that are kind of almost there, but just very rough around the edges and something is a bit off with them. But they are still really enjoyable comfort games with this slightly low poly, slightly unfinished, unpolished sort of feel to them, but a lot of quality in there too. So I put it alongside that kind of game. It's perhaps not quite as good as those other 8 out of 10s, I would say, that I'm talking about, like Wavetail, Gunk, you know, 7.5, 8 out of 10. This one's like a pure 7, maybe like a 6.5, but I'm just really enjoying it. There is a crafting element. There are, you know, characters that you meet. There are different areas of the jungle that you open up. There are side quests. You can photograph the animals for bonus points. You can collect different flowers to make dyes for people. Loads and loads of content in there, and it's all quite cozy and basic and easy to get lost in. The game is absolutely packed with bugs and jank. There are loads of invisible walls. There are bits of floor that you will fall through here and there. I've had bugs where I had hard crashes. I've had bugs where I removed withering and it did not vanish from the screen, and my character was just invisible during a cutscene because something was on screen that wasn't supposed to be there. I've had two types of music playing at once. I've had just all kinds of bugs almost constantly, but I've just been having a really good time with it. It's been a comfort game. There is some really nice design in here. For example, you get Metroidvania type skills to open up new areas, and you can also possess each animal and run around as them in a sort of circumference around you. Different animals have different talents, like they can break through barriers, they can push blocks, they can drop ramps if they are flying ones that sort of peck away the gum that is holding the ramp in place. And there are some really nice little areas where you do a little circuit that's about 10 minutes long, and you have to use all of the animals, tame them, learn their songs, and then possess them and use them in sequence to open a way forward, and then take all of the animals to the teleportation point and get them out of there. And they're really fun, those ones. They're just little nice slices of game that are discrete little areas. It has a very addictive collectathon thing to it. You really do get caught up in getting all of the animals out of there. I'm 7.5 hours in, and I've been enjoying playing this one for a couple of hours each night. I may come back and give it a full review, so I will wind up my thoughts on it there for now. But if you fancy a cozy collectathon type game, well, there have been a couple in this podcast, actually. Maybe you'll be one of the people for whom Dungeons of Hinterburg lands and becomes your comfort game. Or maybe, if you're like me, Creatures of Ava will hit the spot. I may circle back and talk about it again. I'm quite curious to see how they decide to try and land this eco story with the misplaced effort to evacuate all of the animals without really asking anyone. So if I enjoy the game and if I get to the end and there is something more to say on it, then I will circle back to it. But for now, that is Creatures of Ava. So that's our episode for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Bit of a grab bag episode this time. We talked about Phantom Spark out on the 15th. We talked about Arco, also out on the 15th. That's a really, really good one. Those two games are full-throated recommendations from me. Pick up Phantom Spark, pick up Arco. These are going to be talking about these towards the end of the year, I think. And we also talked about Nobody Wants to Die. We talked about Dungeons of Hinterberg. And we wrapped things up with Creatures of Ava. And also, I will put links in the description for those podcasts that I recommended at the start for So Video Games, the Pages of Play, and for the pre-order bonus 1,000 Times Resist guest episode. If you'd like to tell me what you're playing or hear me talk about something on the show or recommend a game, you can find me on Twitter as Gaming in the Wild, also Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I publish YouTube videos all the time. It's youtube.com/gamingintheWild. And you are, of course, also welcome to come and join the Patreon at patreon.com/gamingintheWild. Thanks very much to the boss tier patrons, Mike Sampier and Shy Guy. As you may know, if you're a regular listener, I'm a video games layoff, so I'm trying to make more money from content creation, such as this podcast and YouTube, so they all help me to get by. If you would like to join, it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild. I'll be back next week with a new episode. And with that, thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.
Give the gift that everyone wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Save on USDA-certified tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, perfectly aged ribeyes, gourmet sides, and decadent desserts, delivered right to their door. Skip the stress. Order now at omahasteaks.com. That's omahasteaks.com, and use code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout to get an extra $35 off. Hurry, these deals won't last. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.